Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, August 13th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, ISU Prepares, Board OKs $3.3 million for testing as students move in, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Illinois State University plans to pay an outside firm up to $3.3 million through the end of the year to provide COVID-19 surveillance testing services to limit potential outbreaks of the illness on campus. Surveillance testing refers to general testing of people without symptoms of COVID-19. The ISU Board of Trustees authorized the contract with Reditus Laboratories of Pekin on Wednesday in a special meeting that took place virtually. The action came as students are moving back to on- and off-campus housing, with fall semester classes starting Monday. The testing will be provided from Monday through December 31st. Reditus is the same lab operating the testing facility at the McLean County Fairgrounds and also is providing on-campus testing for symptomatic students under a separate contract that did not require board action. The $3.3 million figure is based on doing an average of 1,500 tests per week at $110 each. The university will only pay for tests that are actually completed. President Larry Dietz said after the meeting, "The initial focus will be on students in on-campus housing, but testing will not be mandatory." Among testing sites being considered are one behind Alamo 2 and Stevenson Hall, which would be close to Watterson Towers and Manchester Hewitt, and one at the site of the old fire station near the golf course, which would be close to Tri-Towers and Cardinal Court. At least one student on campus has tested positive. That student, connected to a residence hall, has left campus to isolate, according to ISU spokesman Eric Jome, who did not release additional details, citing privacy concerns. Students began returning to campus nearly 2 weeks ago, beginning with resident assistants and other essential student workers. RAs were required to take COVID-19 tests and isolate until they received their test results. A parent told the ISU board during the public comment section of the meeting that two Hewitt Hall resident assistants lost their positions because they had spent about 20 minutes together instead of the allowed 15 minutes, and one later received a positive result on his COVID-19 test. Matt Quinones of Berwyn said his daughter, a junior, and her friend, a senior, reported to their supervisor that they had visited for longer than 15 minutes. Their honesty resulted in them losing their positions and having to move out, he said. His daughter moved back home, but Quinones and other speakers said the other student has been scrambling to find housing and has not received help from the university. Mathematics professor Fusan Akman called on housing services to rethink these selective, cruel, and punitive policies. They don't work. Imagine what people will do now when they get sick. They'll show up for work out of fear. Carrie Anna Cortad, an associate professor in special education, said the punishment does not fit the crime and added, "Where have our values gone? Where is our common sense? Did they also die with this pandemic?" Dietz said after the meeting he would be following up with Levister Johnson, the Vice President of Student Affairs, about the situation involving the RAs. The residence hall move-in period continues through the weekend. Even in normal years, students are given assigned times to move into residence halls. But this year, instead of the usual crunch on the Wednesday through Friday before classes start, move-in times are more spread out. Typically, many volunteers are on hand to help those moving in, but volunteer help will be limited, said Joan. "It's not that we don't want to be helpful. We just don't want to have a lot of people crowded together at the same time, he said. ISU originally planned to have a mixture of in-person, online, and hybrid classes this fall, but Dietz announced August 4th that more classes were moving to online because of anticipated shortages in testing supplies. About 80% of classes will be online only. Only those requiring a face-to-face component, such as the sciences, music, and art, will remain face-to-face or online. Ackman also questioned the decision to have Milner Library open. It's going to result in clusters of infections among our students and library staff, she told the board. The next front page story is entitled, McLean County Unit 5, Parents Hit Remote Learning. Dropping in-person option, a child care dilemma, critics say. By Sierra Henry. Normal. Some parents are pushing back against McLean County Unit 5 district leaders' plan to start the school year with remote learning. The plan that you put out last week is all for you, Charles Brown said during the Wednesday night school board meeting. Nothing in there suggests there is consideration for these parents that can't take off, that don't have family members that can help. The plan to shift to remote learning only for the beginning of fall semester was unveiled August 6th, a reversal from plans announced last month. District leaders previously had said parents would be able to choose between remote learning and in-person options, though Superintendent Kristen Weichel said the plans were subject to change based on factors related to the spread of COVID-19. During the public comment portion of the meeting, parents expressed frustration with the plan, especially for families who cannot work from home or afford adequate child care. Kendra Long, who has two sons with learning disabilities, said the new plan does not account for children with individual education plans. Long implored the board to search for a different solution for students who require in-person education and therapy. When Governor J.B. Pritzker on April 17th ordered schools to close, Long found it nearly impossible to work and fill in as a teacher and therapist for her children. It's absurd to believe an individualized remote learning plan will work for these children, Long said. If I sound frustrated, it's because my heart is broke for my children. I know there's a better solution out there. We just have to be willing to try. Pritzker has since given school districts the option to determine how to deal with the pandemic and classes with state guidance. The Unit 5 School Board approved the original return to school plan 2 weeks ago. During Wednesday's meeting, Weichel cited additional information about the susceptibility of children contracting the virus, inadequate staffing for online and in-person learning, and the rise in the number of coronavirus cases in McLean County as reasons for the switch to remote learning. Weichel also addressed concerns parents have for remote learning and providing plans for students with IEPs, and said staff will work with families to develop personal remote learning plans. It's really difficult to generalize because we can't generalize, said Weichel. With special education, we have to look at students' individual needs. That could mean providing some in-person services to students and families who want it, she said. And here's another school story on page one entitled, Bloomington District 87, Board OK's Plan for Fall with Remote-Only Classes, by Kelsey Watznauer. Bloomington. Bloomington District 87 is preparing to begin the school year online with a new Return to Learning resolution approved by the school board Wednesday night, and more information to be sent out to the community Thursday. Now we're at one goal, and that one goal is so we can be laser-focused, collaborate, work together in the best learning environment that doesn't split our energy, said Superintendent Barry Riley. The district announced last week it would begin the year with only remote learning, a reversal from plans announced in July that offered families a choice between remote and in-person learning options. All staff members will be on site the week of August 17th to 28th for professional development. But after August 31st, some staff may choose to work from home. Depending on what their work entails, their access to reliable high-speed internet, and other factors. Our District 87 students should get a robust learning environment during this time, and I feel very, very confident that our staff will be able to provide that, said Assistant Superintendent Diane Wolf. Orientation for students will begin August 31st, and Wolf said elementary students and their parents will be invited into classrooms on a one-to-one basis. Our teachers felt very strongly about those kindergarten kids being able to see the classrooms, though all elementary students will be able to visit, Wolf said. When the school year begins, special focus will be given to social-emotional learning at every level, because while adults may be able to adjust, children are expected to have a more difficult time with this level of isolation, Wolf said. We know this is really hard on kids, and that's what made this such a hard decision, she said, explaining the social-emotional part of the plan. When the district administration came to the decision to go fully remote for at least the first 9 weeks of the year, Riley said they knew it was going to be difficult for staff because of how late it was, but we really had to account for safety first. The back-to-school resolution will leave room for modification, and at the end of the first 9 weeks, the schools could have a gradual return to in-person learning, depending on local positivity rates of COVID-19 and other factors, Riley said. Additional information will be distributed to the community Thursday, including scheduling, food service details, and technology updates. Families with questions can email connect@district87.org. In other business, the district's tentative budget for the 2021 fiscal year was presented Wednesday, with an estimated initial structural deficit of $3.4 million on the operating funds. The board will vote on the tentative budget at the September 23rd meeting. The board also voted to extend the Bloomington Education Association contract through the 2020-21 school year. This agreement includes a 2% salary increase for employees who are off the salary schedule and step increases in wages for all other employees, which average 2.8%. The teachers' union approved the extension July 21st. The next article is entitled, Locals Share in Business Grants. State allots $46 million in federal recovery aid. By Annalisa Trofimik and Jerry Nowicki. Bloomington. More than two dozen McLean County businesses will receive part of $46 million in grant funding meant to help with economic stress during the coronavirus pandemic. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Wednesday announced the funding from the Business Interruption Grant, or BIG, program, which is funded through the Federal CARES Act. The initial allotment of $46 million split between 2,655 small businesses is part of $636 million in total funding for the program. Of that funding, $270 million will go to child care providers. Pritzker said the initial allotments were distributed in 78 of the state's 102 counties. The initial focus of these grants has been on businesses that have been most severely impacted by COVID-19, those that were completely shut down in the spring, and those that are in COVID-impacted areas that experienced property damage amidst the looting and civil unrest in June, the governor said at a COVID-19 news conference in Chicago Wednesday. The grants range from $10,000 to $20,000 each per business. In McLean County, gyms and restaurants were among the 25 beneficiaries, as well as the Castle Theater. More than $24 million of the first allotment will go to disproportionately impacted areas as designated by the General Assembly. These include areas significantly impacted by COVID-19 and other adverse economic conditions. In total, 30% of big funds will go to businesses located in those areas. The governor's office said more than 5,000 businesses applied for the grants, and those who received them were chosen by random lottery. Michael Negron, acting director of the state's Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, told the Pantograph that the BIG program aims to assist businesses with the most urgent needs and those who were hit the hardest during the early stages of the pandemic. The program was created with equity in mind, Negron said. DCEO oversees the grants. About a third of the funds that were available were targeting those disproportionately impacted areas, said Negron. Businesses in areas with a high number of COVID-19 cases, significant poverty and unemployment rates were a priority. Then we added a layer of analysis for places that faced property damage from civil unrest. Businesses throughout the country experienced looting and vandalism after protests and rallies meant to honor the life of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who died while in Minneapolis police custody. Negron said about half of the funding in the first round of the BIG program went to minority business owners. Equity will continue to be a central focus for upcoming waves of BIG grants, Negron said. He added that downstate businesses saw about $10 million of the $46 million in the first round of the BIG program. In subsequent waves, that share will go significantly higher, he said. Additional resources will also be available to downstate small businesses in the future. He advised that business owners check the department's website and social media for the application. In the meantime, business owners can request their local government officials to apply for grants through the Downstate Small Business Stabilizing Program, Pritzker announced in March. Negron said the program has about $16 million of the $20 million the state started off with, and applications are still being accepted. Pritzker called the news conference to discuss the financial effects of the virus and associated government shutdowns, and when questioned, he said he does not want to send the state back down that path. That's the last thing that's on my mind if I can avoid it, he said, of potential shutdowns. But the truth is that if we keep going in the wrong direction, we will inevitably get there. That's why I want everybody to take personal responsibility. A new rule allowing health officials to levy fines against businesses that are lax on social distancing and face covering requirements will help in that area, he said. Still, he said, five of the state's 11 reopening regions have seen an uptick in their positivity rates from a week ago, while only a pair of regions have seen the number decrease. I want to emphasize again that local officials should pay close attention to the data for their communities and, where necessary, step up and impose greater mitigations on a targeted basis to bring down the number of infections or the positivity rate, he said. And a sidebar gives us a list of the McLean County grant recipients. Bumper's Pub, Colfax, $10,000. Bloomington Strongman, Bloomington, $20,000. Element 26, Bloomington, $20,000. Game Time Gym 2, Incorporated, Bloomington, $20,000. Coffrin's ATA Martial Arts, Bloomington, $20,000. Moraine View LLC, Leroy, $20,000. Fat Albert's Gridley, $20,000. Pizza Ranch, Bloomington, $20,000. The Finish Line, Chinoa, $20,000. Golden Dragon Chinese Restaurant, Bloomington, $10,000. Tiffany Howard In-Home Child Care, Bloomington, $10,000. Oh Baby, Bloomington, $10,000. Play Normal Esports Cafe, Bloomington, $10,000. Prima Beauty Studio, Bloomington, $10,000. Bloomington Normal YMCA, Bloomington, $20,000. Castle Theater, Bloomington, $20,000. Hair Masters Institute of Cosmetology, Bloomington, $20,000. Husted Jewelers Incorporated, Bloomington, $20,000. Joe's Station House Pizza Pub, Normal, $20,000. Meltdown Creative Works, Bloomington, $20,000. Jazz Up Front, Bloomington, $20,000. Super Sign Service, LLC, Bloomington, $20,000. Joe's Pub, Bloomington, $20,000. Upper Limits, Bloomington, $20,000. And Vrooman Mansion Bed and Breakfast, Bloomington, $20,000. State officials said the grants may be used to help businesses with working capital expenses, including payroll costs, rent, utilities, and equipment, as well as other unexpected costs to mitigate the impact of the pandemic, such as PPE, training, and new technology. The next story is entitled, Recoveries Still Outpace New Cases. 3 die in LaSalle County, 14 new cases, 21 better in McLean. By Paul Sweech. Bloomington. While 14 more COVID-19 cases were confirmed in McLean County on Wednesday, 21 additional people have recovered, marking the fourth straight day that recoveries outnumbered new cases in the county. Meanwhile, LaSalle County Health Department confirmed 3 new COVID-related deaths in that county, a woman in her 80s and 2 women in their 90s. That means 28 LaSalle County residents have died of COVID this year, including 10 so far this month. In McLean County, Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said Wednesday that the new cases there bring to 670 the number of McLean County residents who have been diagnosed with the novel virus since March 19th. McKnight also reported that 572 of the 670 people have recovered from the virus, an increase of 21 from Tuesday. 82 people are at home in isolation, 8 fewer than on Tuesday. One person was hospitalized with the virus, after no one was hospitalized with COVID in McLean County for 2 days. 15 people have died of the virus in McLean County since March, but no new deaths have been confirmed for more than a month. The county's 7-day positivity rate, the percentage of the tests of county residents that have come back positive for the virus during the 1-week period ending Tuesday, remained 1.8%. The increase in cases followed a record high number of people tested for COVID-19 on Tuesday at the test site at the McLean County Fairgrounds at 1106 Interstate Drive, Bloomington. According to the McLean County Emergency Management Agency, 729 people were tested on Tuesday, That test site is open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. Also open on Thursday will be the McLean County Health Department's fourth rural mobile COVID-19 test site. That site will be in operation 9 a.m. to noon at 307 North Harrison Street, Colfax. In LaSalle County, Health Department Public Information Officer Leslie Daugherty said 29 more people have tested positive for the virus, bringing that county's total to 830. The new cases range from a female teenager to a woman more than 100 years old. 315 of the 830 people with COVID have recovered. Tazewell County Health Department reported 24 new cases on Wednesday, bringing that county's COVID total since March to 576. Of the 576 Tazewell County residents who have tested positive for the virus, 323 have recovered, 239 are in home isolation, 6 are hospitalized, and 8 died earlier this year. Livingston and Ford counties each reported 2 new cases, bringing Livingston's total to 134 and Ford's total confirmed cases to 53. Meanwhile, Illinois Department of Corrections responded via email to Pantograph questions regarding an increase in COVID cases at Logan Correctional Center for Women near Lincoln. As of Wednesday, 60 inmates had COVID and 5 had recovered, and 5 staff had COVID and 10 had recovered. The Illinois Department of Corrections remains deliberate and aggressive in its response to COVID-19, Media Coordinator Heidi Brown wrote. All staff and women in custody at Logan Correctional Center are equipped with personal protective equipment, PPE, and have access to antibacterial soap, hand sanitizer, and cleaning supplies. Logan Correctional Center is currently on medical quarantine status with restricted movement, Brown continued. If an inmate develops COVID symptoms, she is assumed to be at high risk and isolated and tested. Other inmates who may have been exposed also are tested, quarantined, and monitored for symptoms, Brown wrote. All staff are screened, their temperature is checked, and they are given PPE, she wrote. Each Department of Corrections facility has a safety officer whose responsibilities include proper PPE use, deep cleaning, temperature checks, and screening measures, she wrote. Statewide, Illinois Department of Public Health, IDPH, reported 1,645 new COVID cases on Wednesday and 16 additional deaths. That means 198,593 Illinoisans have been sickened by the novel virus this year, and 7,672 of them have died, IDPH said. The statewide positivity rate for cases as a percent of total tests for the 7-day period ending Tuesday was 4.1%. IDPH reported that 1,525 people in Illinois were hospitalized on Wednesday with COVID, and 357 of them were in intensive care units. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for August 13th. Please stay tuned.